Globetrotter, How Abe Saperstein Shook Up the World of Sports is a new book by Mark Jacob and Matthew Jacob. Mark, longtime journalist here in Chicago, he and his brother put together a book about the Harlem Globetrotters, which is a Chicago story. Harlem, Chicago. Mark's in our studio. I thoroughly enjoyed the book.
Well, thanks, John.
Why did you pick this up? How did you decide to write about Abe Saperstein?
Well, my brother, Matthew, younger brother, lives in Arlington, Virginia, and I live here in the Chicago area, and we're close, and we like to do projects together, and we were looking for a biography, and a friend of mine named Rich Cahan said, "Hey, have you thought about Abe Saperstein?" And I said, "No, I haven't, but I'll look into it." And, you know, so I did the old Google thing. I had heard Abe Saperstein as a guy who started the Harlem Globetrotters who was around, you know, was a Chicagoan, and that's all I knew. And the more I started reading, my brother and I were just blown away by how much this guy did and how much his reach was. I mean, the Globetrotters are really important in the history of basketball, but this guy did stuff completely unrelated to the Globetrotters that was just shook up the world of sports.
What era, what years are we talking about here?
Well, he was born in 1902 in London, the son of Polish-Jewish immigrants who had stopped in London, stayed there a few years. He was born there, and then they moved to Chicago. And his dad was a tailor. They lived in the Ravenswood neighborhood, though just about probably the only Jewish family in that neighborhood, made up of mostly of Germans and Irish. And so Abe grew up there, became a loved sports, but was only 5'3". I mean, he's the shortest guy. probably the shortest guy in the Basketball Hall of Fame right now. And so he loved sports. He got
wasn't a bad basketball player.
No,
but was
he was
real
good.
Short. He was a guard.
Good. Well, they had actually three different divisions of
right.
Chicago basketball, public school basketball, and he was in the shortest one. Or they actually measured it by weight, so he was in the smallest one, and was good. But he wasn't, you know, he wasn't going to go to the pro or anything, but he loved it, and he got a job in the parks and started coaching basketball and baseball, and by doing that, he met folks on the South Side, black folks who were also involved in athletics. And the thing about it, John, is this is we're talking about the 1920s, and this is not long after the Chicago race riot in 1919. So it wasn't like black people and white people got along very well. But Abe Saperstein broke through a lot of that. I mean, he was one of those, you know, as I say, he came from a neighborhood where he was a minority, and he just kind of cut through things. He was a second baseman for the Roman Catholic school baseball team when he was a kid. So, you know, he got along with other people. And so he made friends with these black basketball players, and they set out, you know, to do barnstorming tours to make a little money in the Midwest in small white towns.
Because
and
professional basketball didn't exist at the time.
It was, you know, it was that you would maybe go on tours and you would, you know, get a little money for games with local teams and like that. But it wasn't organized like it is now, and it was definitely less important and less of interest than college basketball.
Right.
College basketball.
So he forms this team, but why do they call it the Harlem Globetrotters if they're from Chicago and they're traveling in the rural United States?
Well, they're, you know, obviously not from Harlem, and also not Globetrotters. They just were like traveling around to neighboring states and to downstate Illinois to do games. So he called them that because Harlem was kind of code for black people, you know, and so he wanted to signal to these small white towns that he was bringing in black people, and don't be surprised, everything's going to go fine. And so I think that was a matter, it was branding, and it was marketing.
Why would he go to small rural towns with an all-black basketball team?
Well, because to make money. I mean, it wasn't like he was going to get a gig in Madison Square Garden.
But they would entertain him, and so as long as they knew what they were going to get, they were okay.
Right.
With this black team coming.
Right. He just didn't. It was one of those no surprises kind of thing. We didn't want any unpleasant
Who
surprises.
Who would they play then in these games?
They played local school teams, local college teams, factory teams. You know,
and how would they do?
They were so good. You know, they were just really skilled basketball players. And by the way, Abe showed up as the coach, and he wore a suit, but he wore his uniform underneath it, so that if any of his five players got fouled out or got injured, he could come in and play.
So were they a comedy act, or were they, was it legitimate basketball?
They were both. They were a really good team, and they won like 90% of their games, you know, in the early years. And they always had a little comedy in it. Because one of the problems was they were winning games by so much that they didn't want to bore the fans, so they could brought comedy and trick passes and all this other kind of stuff that the Globetrotters are known for. They brought that in order to keep people entertained, but also they were going on the road every night into a different town. So part of the clowning was to keep them from being exhausted by big, long games. And also, they didn't want to humiliate their opponents so much that they wouldn't welcome them back the next year.
So they'd maybe keep it close with
yeah.
their antics, but knew they could win.
Right. That was the kind of, that was the way they did it. But what needs to not be lost is the fact that they were a very good basketball team. One of the best.
Well, in fact, when the team evolved and professional basketball, quote unquote, was evolving, there were, quote unquote, national championships. And
right.
they would actually compete in these tournaments, right?
Right. There was an annual tournament in Chicago, and like started in 1939 and went in through the 40s. There was a pro basketball tournament. And I mean, it was just the atmosphere was different. There wasn't much league play. There was some professional league play, but not much. And, you know, George Halas, who owned the Chicago Bears, he had a team called the Bruins that played basketball. And so they had these professional teams, and the Globetrotters actually won the world championship in Chicago in 1940.
It's just so interesting to me because I think of the Globetrotters as not playing a legitimate team.
Right.
They're playing the Washington Generals, and it's
right.
all shtick. But their origin was really athleticism and competitiveness with the comedy on top.
Right. And Abe, by not being racist, managed to had really the pick of most of the black talent, you know, in the Midwest at least, and so that's one of the reasons his team was really good. There was another team called the Wrens from Harlem. Actually, was from Harlem.
From Harlem, yeah.
And they were probably the best black team for a while, but eventually the Globetrotters became better.
Saperstein wasn't racist, certainly by that day's standards, but he said and did things and treated his players in a way that today would get him labeled.
Yeah, sure. And one of the challenges in the book was to tell a nuanced portrait of it, and to not shy away from the racism of the day. And
give me an example of the racism of the day as the Globetrotters experienced it.
This kind of blew me away a little bit. I mean, because not that I didn't know about it, but just the specifics of it. For example, it was a widespread misconception among white people in America that black athletes were bad at team sports. Now, when you think about that today, sounds like the most absurd thing you could possibly imagine. I mean, nobody who watches sports today could possibly think that. Yet, it was thought that, well, black athletes, they may run fast and jump high, but they're not good at team sports because that's too intellectually complex. And they don't, you know, you have to. And there's also this myth that black players choked in the clutch, that old thing. And Abe Saperstein specifically said he was blowing away those myths by showing how good they could play. And it was just this routine racism, you know.
Was it a big deal for them to play an all-white team, say in the national championship or in some of these venues? They would sometimes be playing in front of 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people, depending on the year we're talking
right.
about in the crowd. But I mean, people wanted to see them play. But what was it like, this black team, then playing that white team?
There's a really important game, and we lead the book with it, that took place at Chicago Stadium in 1948. And this is just when the NBA is getting going. And it's the team, the Minneapolis Lakers. If you're a Chicago sports fan, you will probably have heard of George Mikan, who was the great player for DePaul. And he was on that team, the Minneapolis Lakers. And he wasn't the only good player. There were a lot of good players on the team. And everyone considered them the best team in the world. And I mean, when I say the world, basketball wasn't that popular outside the United States. It was invented in, you know, in Massachusetts. For
baseball example. Was a big deal, but basketball right. was in its infancy.
Right, right. And this is another thing that's really important about Saperstein is how much he popularized basketball around the world. But back to this game. So they arrange a game between the Globetrotters and the Minneapolis Lakers. And everyone thinks the Globetrotters, you know, just, you know, they're a black team for one, and they, you know, they're probably not good at team sports. And also, you know, that they're a clown act, that they, because they always did those kind of entertaining tricks and trick passes, but also kind of messed with the referees, all the stuff. If you know the Globetrotters, you know they do. And so they were not taken seriously, but it was a tremendous game, and we describe it in great detail in the book. And the Globetrotters end up winning on a last-second shot. And everyone's like, you know, wow, this is fantastic. You know, and people who were studying the history of sports and the history of basketball cite that game as an example of how it was no longer possible for racists in sports to say that black people couldn't play with white people. It was just, it just blew it away. And 2 years later, the NBA integrated.
Slowly, but eventually.
Yeah, well, yeah. And so it became, and the first black player in the NBA was a former Globetrotter from around here, Sweetwater Clifton.
Hmm. The NBA royalty that appears in the book, I knew that Wilt Chamberlain had played a year with the Harlem Globetrotters, but I didn't know the full story. His year of eligibility, you couldn't play in the NBA until your class
right.
graduated from college. Since he opted out of college his junior year, he had a year he had to sit on the sidelines.
Right.
And Saperstein made him rich just that 1 year. They made 7'1" Wilt Chamberlain a point guard. A point guard.
Right.
What a show that must have been.
Well, right. Wilt wasn't just a tall guy. He was a great athlete. And so he could play point guard. And they did that because Meadowlark Lemon was the guy in the post. He was the main showman. And Chamberlain loved playing with the Globetrotters, was really friendly with Saperstein. And he after Chamberlain went to the NBA, even during the summers, he would tour Europe with the Globetrotters and play with them, something that, you know, no sports owner would ever
yeah.
allow today.
But they made more money playing for the Globetrotters than they did right. with the professional teams. We're talking to Mark Jacob. I'm John Williams. His book is Globetrotter, How Abe Saperstein Shook Up the World of Sports. Mark and his brother Matthew wrote the book. It's just out. It's every page you go, holy cow, that person, this thing, that person, this thing. The book is called Globetrotter, How Abe Saperstein Shook Up the World of Sports. If you like sports stories, if you like Chicago stories, if you like stories about people with irrepressible energy, then this is the book for you. It's well told. I mean, that was the other thing about this Abe Saperstein guy. I don't know who to compare him to. Who is the Mark Cuban, the Elon Musk? Who is the dynamo out there that just can't be stopped?
Yeah.
That's him.
Cuban might be a good comparison. Saperstein, I mean, he lived for 63 years. He did put more into those years than anyone I could have ever met. And there's one anecdote in the book where he calls up a sports writer in Minneapolis or in Minnesota, and he at 2 a.m. and says, hey, I don't think my team's playing that well this year. What do you think? At 2 a.m., and the sports writer writes about it, like, you know, does Abe Saperstein ever sleep?
He was also pretty good at manipulating the media in an era before there was the internet, in an era where reporters were always looking for stuff. He would feed them stuff. He would sometimes write up stories like they would,
right.
and they would just run his story about
right.
him or his team.
Right. You will see, like, a story that's identical in newspapers around the country. And it's not because it was a wire service story. It's because Abe Saperstein and his team wrote it like a newspaper story, and people just took it and put it in their paper.
The title of your book is Globetrotter. In other words, it's about him
right.
as more than the team, which is not lost on me because half of your book is about baseball. What's his connection to baseball?
Yeah, see, Saperstein, I mean, people think of him for the Globetrotters in basketball, but he was really important in baseball in a number of ways. He was a big promoter of the Negro Leagues, and they were struggling, as you can well imagine, and in the, you know, the Depression, and in, you know, and what he ended up doing is scheduling them for a lot of barnstorming games, non-league games, where they would just go on the road and, you know, and play. And they had to do that to make money to stay in business. And Saperstein was one of the main people who booked them on those games.
You talking about the baseball team or basketball?
No, the baseball team. The various baseball teams, Negro Leagues baseball teams. He also was part owner of the Birmingham Black Barons, which was a Negro Leagues team. And because he had all those Globetrotter kind of booking connections for basketball, he knew places where the Negro Leagues teams could play. He knew, he knew the sports writers in all the towns. He just was so well connected that he helped make Negro Leagues baseball work.
The names that pop up then in the telling of his story and the impact on baseball include Satchel Paige, Bob Gibson,
right.
Henry Aaron makes a cameo in the book briefly. But talk about maybe the Satchel Paige story vis-a-vis him.
He's a great character in the book. And in the history of sports, as you know, Satchel Paige, one of the greatest pitchers in Negro Leagues and in baseball, period. But there's a color barrier, and so he's not playing in the major leagues. He's playing in the Negro Leagues, and he and Saperstein have they have this real connection, and that they decide to go out and make a lot of money with Satchel Paige's incredible talent. And Satchel Paige wasn't just a great pitcher; he was a great pitcher, but he was also a real showman. He would wind up in kind of a windmill motion, and he would talk to the batters, and he would, tell the batters what kind of pitch he was going to throw them, and then he'd strike them out anyway. He was just this character. He once said, when they kept on asking him how old he was, he'd say he didn't know because his birth date had been written in the family Bible and a goat had eaten the Bible. So he, like Saperstein, he was a very colorful figure that the sports writers
loved.
How
old was he when he finally got into the major league?
He was 42 years old, and almost everyone thought he was over the hill. This was a year after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. And so Saperstein, is still friends with Satchel Paige, and he's also friends with Bill Veeck, who Chicago sports fans will know, once owned the White Sox. But at that time, he owned the Cleveland Indians, and he had a really good team, but they had a terrible bullpen. And so he's talking to his friend Abe Saperstein and says, what are we going to do about this? And Saperstein says, have you thought about Satchel Paige? And everyone, all the front office people in Cleveland are saying, you got to be kidding me. He's an elderly gentleman. And so Saperstein says, I'm going to bring him in for a tryout. Just watch him pitch. And they did. And they were impressed by him, and they signed him.
They signed him to $25,000 on the spot.
Right, right.
And was a lot of money at the time.
Yeah, right. And, and Abe got some money as a signing, for setting it up.
Abe always got money.
Yeah, he did. But you know what? He could have been richer if he'd wanted to be. I think he was very successful, but he wasn't the only person who made money off the Globetrotters.
He was generous. So then Paige makes it to the pros, and how well does 42-year-old Satchel Paige pitch in the major league?
Well, he came in midseason, and he ended up 6-1, and they ended up the regular season tied, so which meant that 6-1 meant that that's how they got that far. And then they had a one-game playoff. The Cleveland Indians won it, and then they went to the World Series and won that. So the reason that they won the World Series that year was because of 42-year-old Satchel Paige.
One last thing, Mark. We have to wrap this up, but the book telling the baseball stories, the basketball stories, the cultural stories, the racism that pops up, and you guys don't harp on it. You simply just illuminated, and it's staggering at times. So you describe one scene where I believe it was the baseball players would play a game for the white audience, and then they'd play a game for the black audience, but they wouldn't even be in the stands at the same time. And some of the awful things that a police chief or a mayor or other players on teams that these black guys could have played on were just heartbreaking in a way.
Yeah. And see, Abe, he was a creature of his time. He said some things that were inappropriate,
uh-huh.
But at the same time, he thought racism was stupid and segregation was stupid. And when he went to Atlanta one time, he went to, checked in at the black hotel along with his players. And, in the middle of the night, the sheriff comes knocking on his door and says, you got to leave. You got to go back up to the white area to get a hotel room. And he's like saying, what are you kidding me? And then that's what they made him do.
Yeah.
And it was one thing I did before I forget, I wanted to say is that that Abe Saperstein pioneered the three-point shot in basketball. We didn't even get to that, John.
No, we didn't. And we didn't talk about the fact that he said, you know, when a good team is in town, we should charge more for the tickets. Or was that Bill
Beck? No, that was Saperstein.
And when a lousy team is in town, which is, well, of course, what we have in ticket schedules now, do read Globetrotter, How Abe Saperstein Shook Up the World of Sports by Mark and Matthew Jacob. Nice to see you, Mark.
Thank you.